What's up, everyone? This is episode number 270 of the Wax Museum Podcast, where I talk about all things basketball cards from past to present to future. This is your host, Kyle, and as always, you guys can find me throughout the week on social media. My Instagram is at Wax Museum Podcast. My X account is at Wax Museum PC. Okay, so as you guys know, the Pacers and Knicks are duking it out right now in the hopes of making it past the second round and into the Eastern Conference Finals. This past weekend, I was fortunate enough to fly into Indianapolis for Game 4, a game that Pacers fans on Twitter have dubbed the Mother's Day Massacre. And I have to admit, I kind of like that. It has a nice ring to it, although the Pacers then went back to New York and laid an egg in Game 5. Anyway, in today's main segment, I'm going to talk all about that Indy trip, which included a stop at a card shop I never visited. It was something I'll never forget, so you'll want to make sure to stay tuned for that. But first, I want to take a little time to run everyone through a quick history lesson on the Pacers-Knicks rivalry, to kind of give you the rundown on why I think this series is such a big deal, and why the Knicks are on a very short list of teams I absolutely hate losing to. Right now, that list also includes the Pistons and the Heat. I'd add the Bucks on too, but the Pacers haven't ever really lost to them like that. But I digress. Anyway, I had planned to do this a couple weeks ago as a lead-in to my Reggie Miller countdown, but it wasn't a sure thing that the two teams were going to end up playing one another, and I don't like to count my chickens before they hatch. But here we are. The Knicks lead this series 3-2. It could very well be over very soon, so I figured the time is right. And I mentioned Reggie Miller, and that seems to be where most people start when they want to talk about this rivalry. And I started watching the Pacers smack dab in the middle of that. I think it's safe to say the Reggie era is probably always going to be the most exciting part, but I think everyone should know that it goes beyond that. It actually goes way back. As Will and I talked about many episodes ago, our favorite franchises have kind of followed similar trajectories over the last five decades, give or take a few years. The Pacers won three ABA titles in the 70s, in 70, 72, and 73. The Knicks won two NBA titles in the same time frame, in 70 and 73. And despite the fact that they were champions from rival leagues, it appears as if the two teams played at least three exhibition games around that same time. And it's difficult to find information about these games online, but I believe I found enough clues to show that they faced off in 1970, 1971, and 1975. And according to a 1973 New York Times article, it looks like Pacers coach Slick Leonard challenged New York to another game in 1973, but Knicks management declined. And honestly, I'm not surprised. I know some of these interleague exhibitions started when it seemed like a merger was in sight, but if the NBA truly felt like it was the better league, what did they actually have to gain? Unless the ticket sales really meant that much to them. And this is something I've wondered about for a while, and I just so happened to ask Pacers coach Slick Leonard about it when I interviewed him in the fall of 2020. So I'm going to play a quick clip from that conversation for you now.
So they thought they were going to embarrass us. So it came down to, all five of those starters on the Knicks, which was Dave DeBuscher, Bill Bradley, Earl of Pearl Monroe, Walt Frazier, and I'm trying to think of the center, played that seventh game against the Lakers. He was supposedly hurt. But all five of those guys are in the Hall of Fame. So anyway, they come into Indianapolis. Bill Bradley gets up at a luncheon and looked down his nose at the boys from the cornfields. And that night, Roger Brown said, "Slick, let me have him." Roger hit him with 22 points in the first half. And at the end of the third quarter, we had them down 16 points. Now, here's the NBA champions against the ABA champions. So that tells you a little bit of that story.
The center he was referring to was Willis Reed, which means that would have been the 1970 matchup, although let's take Monroe out of there. He was still in Baltimore at the time. Now, keep in mind, Slick was 88 years old when we recorded that interview, so we're going to give him a pass. The point being, there was already a little animosity building between the champion Pacers and Knicks squads, even back then. Eventually, the Pacers were absorbed into the NBA, and as you've heard on this show before, that essentially gutted the franchise in the process. To say the Pacers were then irrelevant in the 80s is probably an understatement. Although I'd say outside of Bernard King, the Knicks didn't have much going for them either, which is why they were able to draft Patrick Ewing with the first overall pick in 1985. That and maybe a frozen envelope, depending on who you believe. And then 2 years later, the Pacers drafted a guy named Reggie Miller. Both of these guys helped their respective franchises become mainstays in the playoffs for the years to come, and that's where this rivalry was really reignited. The two teams met in the playoffs a total of 6 times between 1993 and 2000, and they split those series at 3 games apiece. Now, I'm not going to sit here and go through every important moment from those series. Some of them, like the Larry Johnson 4-point play, I just don't want to relive. I feel like all of that's covered really well in the 30 for 30 documentary called Winning Time. Just know, there were some theatrics involved, like Reggie Miller scoring 25 points in the fourth quarter of a game at Madison Square Garden, and flashing Spike Lee the choke sign. Their back and forth even inspired a dual auto in the 2003-2004 signature edition set called Marquee Marks. I'd love to get my hands on one. I think I've talked about it before. Probably won't ever own one. I'll just have to settle for the Reggie and Cheryl Miller duel from that set instead. Now, truth be told, Reggie's record at Madison Square Garden might not be as impressive as all of the storytelling implies, but the moments were big, and they obviously struck a chord with Knicks fans. They haven't forgotten, as you saw when Reggie returned to MSG to call Game 2 a week or two ago. The crowd had a not-so-nice chant queued up for him, and Josh Hart made sure that he heard it too. Now, just as the 90s did not mark the beginning of this rivalry, I want to point out that it didn't end there either. The two sides faced off again briefly in 2013 in the second round, where the Pacers won in 6 games. The one lasting memory I have of watching that series is from Game 6, when the Knicks were up 92-90 with 5 minutes left. Carmelo Anthony has the ball, he hits Paul George with a real nice spin move, and proceeds to go up for a dunk, only to be stopped by Pacers center Roy Hibbert, who blocked the shot and sent the franchise back to the Shadow Realm in the process. And no, I'm not trying to be hyperbolic there either. That block more or less ended the Carmelo-era Knicks, because even though he stayed another 4 seasons or so, the Knicks racked up 7 consecutive losing seasons immediately after. They finally made it back to the postseason in 2021, only to lose again to the Hawks, 4-1. And yes, I know that was well within the Dolan-era Knicks, and that's giving a lot of credit to the Hibbert block, but just go with me. It was definitely impactful, and reliving it in the middle of this 2024 series makes for a lot of fun. So that was my attempt to run you through this Pacers-Knicks rivalry. This current series obviously adds another chapter. I'm beyond thrilled that I was able to fly it for a game. And as I said earlier, I'm going to tell you more about that trip in today's main segment. But let's have a quick intermission here from Pacers-Knicks content so I can talk about a few pieces of mail. The first two came via listeners. One of them was a lot of nice Pacers cards from someone named Josh, and I hope he's listening. I tried to track him down via my Instagram messages, but that new AI search function has really screwed things up. So Josh, I tried to reach out. I'm not ignoring you. I'm very appreciative. Thank you. I couldn't find you. Couldn't find you in my messages. And then the second was a package I already showed off on my YouTube channel from a listener named Tommy. He heard me talking about the 2000 Topps Heritage set I'm working on, and he asked for a list of cards I needed, and he was kind enough to send a lot of those my way, as well as a Jason Kidd Retrofractor, which is from a 60-card parallel set that I'm working on from that project as well. So thank you, Tommy. I really appreciate that, and I feel like that set is coming along nicely. Okay, and then finally, I splurged a little bit for this last piece of mail. I purchased a Steph Curry Patch Auto numbered to 8 from 2022 Leaf Trinity. And even though the card says 2022 Leaf Trinity on it, it took me forever to figure out what the product actually was that this came from, because it wasn't on any of the basketball or multi-sport Trinity checklists that I could find. So as a last resort, I just searched Trinity 2022 Steph Curry to see if maybe there was a break video that had a similar pull. And that's where I discovered it was from 2022 Trinity Soccer. For whatever reason, they had a subset in that product with 7 different basketball guys. Now, while owning a Curry Patch Auto in itself is nice, what really drew me to this card was the source material. And I've kept close tabs on this on Curry's Leaf Relics over the last few years. I think I first noticed this type of material in 2020 in the game used, but it was just white t-shirt pieces. And then shortly after, I saw a listing for a 2019 Leaf Pearl card with the same material, except it had a little bit of gold script on it, like they would use for the NBA Finals logo or the word, you know, Finals in the NBA Finals branded stuff. And actually, the seller of this Leaf Pearl card, and I think the card is even still up for sale, he added a screenshot where he had emailed a Leaf employee to get confirmation that this material with the gold script on it was from the Finals. And the Leaf employee claimed it was. Well, once I knew what I was looking for, I was then able to track the source material down that they purchased from a gray flannel auction in July of 2019. It was called 2015 Steph Curry Golden State Warriors Player Worn NBA Finals Shooting Shirt. So because Leafs relics on the multiplayer stuff is typically, they're pretty small, they've been able to get a lot of good use from that shirt. And I've been watching these relics for a while to try to find one that I thought was, you know, a decent cost or had a nice unique piece to it. And I figured that most of this shirt that they had was used up because recently they've been using a lot of pieces from a pair of yellow warm-ups instead. But then I saw this 2022 Trinity card pop up on eBay with a jumbo patch that appeared to be one of the larger portions of the number piece from that shirt. And even though I didn't really envision myself buying a Curry patch auto right now, I thought, you know, maybe I would just get a small piece of the patch in one of the multiplayer cards. So I didn't envision myself buying that, but I looked at comps and realized it wasn't really outside of the realm of possibility either. I think a lot of people were scared away from this stuff because it was unlicensed, which worked out great for me because if the relic was in fact from the Finals, that fit my collection really well. And then also, you know, Steph Curry is just one of the greatest players of all time, so I would love to own something like that. So before I placed my bid, I messaged a contact of mine at Leaf just to double check that it was from the final shirt that I thought it was. He claimed it was. I put my bid in, and as they say, the rest is history. Now, it took a while to get here from Singapore, but I would say it's definitely worth the wait. So I'll make sure to post a picture of that on social media for you guys if I haven't done so already. All right, before I move into today's main segment, I want to remind you that this show is brought to you in part by the good people over at ComC.com, your home for buying, selling, flipping, and grading. Their consignment marketplace is home to over 33 million cards, from basketball's biggest stars like LeBron James and Kevin Durant to Marvel favorites like Spider-Man and Captain America. ComC has something for every type of collector. Visit ComC.com today to build your collection with your favorite cards. Okay, and then real quick, some of you have asked me for ways you can help support this show. The easiest way is my eBay affiliate link. And I know all you guys use eBay, so it really shouldn't be that big of a hassle. And it costs you absolutely nothing, just an extra 30 seconds or so of your time. But it helps support this show. To access this link, simply go to waxmuseumpodcast.com, click the eBay logo, shop as planned, so whatever you are going to buy anyway, just click my link first, and the show gets a small commission in the process. Once again, that's www.waxmuseumpodcast.com.
This is Slick Leonard. You're listening to the Wax Museum Podcast. Boom, baby!
Okay, so as I mentioned at the start of the show, I flew to Indianapolis this past weekend for a quick visit with family and also to attend the Pacers-Knicks Game 4. Now, I hadn't been to Indy for a game since 2016, and even that was just a preseason game. So it's something I've been meaning to do for a long time. It was just a matter of when, because I definitely wasn't going to pay to fly up when the Pacers were rolling out lineups with guys like Caris LeVert and Kiefer Sykes. So kind of wanted to wait until they were a little bit better. Playoffs seemed like an ideal goal for me. So earlier this season, the Pacers were in the middle of their in-season tournament run, and I pitched the idea of a playoff trip to Mrs. Wax Museum. Without hesitation, she said yes. So from there, it was all contingent on the team making the playoffs, and then whenever we could both get off work for a day or two. Truth be told, I wanted to try and make a Bucks game in round one, primarily because I wasn't so sure there'd be a round two for the Pacers this time around. But guess what? It's testing season at school, which is a really big time of the year for us. We had a big state test right in the middle of that series, so I figured out after a little while, hey, it's just not going to work. Maybe it just wasn't meant to be. Well, luckily, the Pacers won, which meant they would either end up playing the Knicks in Indianapolis for games 3 and 4, because the Knicks would have home court advantage, or the Sixers and Indy for games 1 and 2 because Indy finished with a better record than them. Now, the former worked a lot better for my schedule because it gave me a little time to book flights ahead of time, and luckily that's the way it ended up, but it wasn't a sure thing. So that's the way it ended up. So it was either game 3 or game 4. I asked my sister and brother-in-law which game worked best for them, and they elected to go to game 4, so that was the plan. Mrs. Wax Museum and I flew in on Saturday morning, and as we're making our way through the airport, we noticed a little Pacers restaurant with a few jerseys displayed inside, one of which was Jeff Foster. And I turned and I told her, I said, I think this is a good omen. You know I talk about Jeff a lot on this show, but the odds of his jersey being on display in a Pacers restaurant, you know, when they only had 3 or 4 or 5 jerseys, that's still pretty slim. So anyway, we moved on from there. We hung out with family the rest of the day, and it was a great time. Sunday morning rolled around, and we had a little time before we had to get ready for the big game, which worked out great because I wanted to try and get to a card shop and hopefully pick up something for the Pacers PC in the process. My first choice was going to be Indy Card Exchange. I've been there before, but it's been a handful of years. I haven't been since they've relocated. Unfortunately, they weren't open that early on a Sunday, so I ended up at the best card shop in Plainfield instead. I know that might be a little confusing. That's the name of the shop, Best Card Shop. The setup of this shop was pretty nice. When you walk in, there's a small supplies section and all the showcases separated by sport. Once you move past that, there's a table with different boxes of singles, also separated by sport. I ended up grabbing a handful of cards from the basketball boxes. I got a Pacers silver for my silver binder, some Fever red parallels, a couple cheap things like that. The pricing seemed pretty fair on a lot of that stuff. And then close to that was another area with more supplies and all sorts of blasters, with a big open area where people could open whatever they bought. And I figure that's a good spot for trading as well. And then finally, there was the Wall of Wax, which had a better selection than a lot of the other shops I've been to that are around the same size. If you want to see any of that more specifically, I did a little bit longer video on my YouTube to show that stuff off. Now, I mentioned I was hoping to grab a nice Pacers card for the PC. And of course, when I went in there, I was decked out in all sorts of Pacers gear. I was kind of surprised that whoever was working didn't try to steer me towards something in one of the showcases or mention the Pacers at all, but he wasn't very chatty in general. I think the extent of our conversation was all transactional, which is kind of weird for a card shop, but it is what it is. Anyway, they did have a few nice items for Turner and Mathurin and Halliburton and a couple Reggies as well, but nothing that I was really looking for, so I decided to hold off. Overall, this was a nice little shop. I don't know how often the inventory in the showcases rolls over. I got the impression that the singles and boxes had probably been there a little while, so if I lived nearby, I wouldn't envision myself going through those an awful lot. But if I wanted to rip some product, it makes for a nice spot, especially if there's multiple people in the breaking area at once. Long story short, if you're in the area, I feel like it's at least worth stopping by. Okay, so after that we grabbed lunch, and then it was about time to head to Gainbridge Fieldhouse for the game. I wanted to get there early to walk around and look at all the stuff on display, kind of like I had done in 2016. They've got their ABA titles there. There's some different jerseys of Pacers players, but then also Indiana people as well, like Oscar Robertson. But even with an hour and 15 minutes before tip-off, the concourse was already pretty packed, and we wanted to grab some gear in the team store anyway, so we just went ahead and did that. And I know some of you are probably wondering what autographs I got before the game, because that seems to be something I talk about every time I go to a game. Well, the answer will probably surprise you. The answer is none, because I knew I'd be with family, and because I hadn't been there in so long, I didn't even bring cards of current players to get signed. I decided to forego the whole autograph experience entirely. Eventually, we made our way up to our seats, which were all the way up in Section 227. I joked with Mrs. Wax Museum that it was the first time in a long time I remember being at eye level with the retired player banners, and we've gotten a little spoiled with our seats the past season with there only being the two of us, but in all reality, they were still good seats. I wouldn't have any problem sitting there again, especially if the Pacers played the way they did Sunday. I was a little worried we'd come all the way to Indy for a game, only to leave dejected after a big loss. Well, thankfully, they got off to a big start and never really looked back. Mind you, I've seen the team blow a lot of big leads this season, and the Knicks have had some big runs this series as well, so I didn't really feel safe until I saw Doug McDermott and Jairus Walker enter the game in the fourth. I know Pacers fans were chanting for James Johnson, but he never really got in. He did get in the next game, though, because it was so bad, but he didn't get in while we were there. And a lot of you have been messaging me over the course of this series. Several of you remarked that I picked a good game to go to, and I couldn't agree more. Well, really, my sister picked a good game to go to, and the stars just happened to align. This game was a pretty cool milestone for me, though, because it was the first time I've seen the Pacers in four different arenas in the same season. Atlanta, Miami, Orlando, and now Indy. My previous record was 3. And even better, the Pacers went 4-0 in those games, and they were all good games to watch, too. Now, like I said earlier, the Pacers dropped the next game and are currently down 3-2, but no matter what happens from here on out, it's been a really fun season. And even though I'm trying to kind of mentally prepare myself, I'm not ready for it to end. But that's life, and all good things must come to an end, including this trip. It was short, but I had a great time, and I really appreciate you guys letting me relive it one more time in the form of this main segment. Now, maybe you've had a chance to take a similar trip for your favorite team. Feel free to reach out and tell me about it on social media. You can find me on Instagram under the handle @WaxMuseumPodcast or X under the handle @WaxMuseumPC. In the meantime, if you like the content I'm providing, please subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. Hit up the website for my affiliate links. Tag Taco Bell and let them know they can pay me in burritos. And until next time, this is the Wax Museum Podcast.